Hello and welcome to the Small Business School. My name is Craig Staley, 20-year retail veteran, e-commerce practitioner, and entrepreneur. Each week, I will interview a new small business owner that we can learn from to take our businesses to the next level. Now, let's go. All right, everybody. Today's interview is going to be a little different. You know, normally I'm interviewing business people that maybe a few of you have heard of, or, you know, many of you have probably never heard of before. But today we have a household name on the show. It's someone that I can guarantee that most of you have heard of, especially if you have Netflix. Today's guest is Carol Baskin of Big Cat Rescue and the Netflix series Tiger King. So not a traditional guest today, but it does make sense. She runs, as she says, a $4 million operation with her Big Cat Rescue operation there in Florida. So she is definitely dealing with business issues. And we get into some business questions near the end of the interview. But we talk through, you know, her side of the story a little bit from a Tiger King perspective and, you know, how she got started rescuing big cats near the beginning. Really excited for all of you guys to hear Carol and kind of let her tell her side of the story here in this interview. So without further ado, Carol Baskin. Hello, I'd like to welcome my next guest. It is Carol Baskin. She is the owner of Big Cat Rescue. How are you today, Carol?
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. Thank you for having me, Craig.
I'll be honest. I was hoping you would introduce yourself that way. I really was hoping. You know, obviously, you don't need an introduction. As of March of last year, you kind of became a household name, to say the least, with that Netflix series, Tiger King, and, you know, all that came after it. But if you could, just tell us a little bit in your own words about your background and how Big Cat Rescue came about.
Well, I'm the founder and CEO of Big Cat Rescue, and we actually started in 1992. And it happened because I had done bobcat rehab since I was about 17 years old. So if a bobcat gets hit by a car, the vets can fix them up, but then you're talking months of rehab for them to go back to the wild. And so in 1992, my late husband and I were at an auction and we were buying llamas because we were in real estate for a living. We turned the llamas loose on big tracts of the land. So this guy came in with a six-month-old bobcat, just terrified out of her mind. And they were auctioning her off because his wife didn't want her as a pet anymore because, surprise, surprise, she grew up to be a bobcat.
Yeah.
And so the guy next to me starts bidding on her. And I leaned over and I said, when that cat grows up, she is going to tear your face off. And he said, I'm a taxidermist. I'm just going to club her in the head in the parking lot and make a dent decoration out of her. And so I broke down crying and my husband ended up buying her. And we probably paid more for that bobcat than anybody's ever paid for a bobcat. But she was not going to get killed in the parking lot that day. And she was horrible as a pet. She'd been declawed, so she couldn't be released back to the wild. And so my husband started calling around to see if he could find somebody that she could play with. And a guy said, well, I have some kittens. You can come up here in person, but I won't ship. And so we ended up, my daughter and my husband and I drove to Minnesota. And it turned out to be a fur farm. And we ended up rescuing 56 bobcats and Canada lynx all at one time. And then the next year, 28. And then the next year, 22 off of another fur farm. And then people started calling and saying, would you take my lion? Would you take my tiger? And I'm thinking, what are these people doing with lions and tigers? So, you know, it started out as something where I thought, you know, I can rescue these animals. I can put them in pet homes and they're all going to be safe. And they all started coming back to us about a year and a half later because nobody's willing to live with a bobcat. And you can't release them if they're born in captivity. That's true of any exotic cat. So there was no way that these cats could ever go free. And people didn't want to give them a lifetime home. So they started coming back to us. And we realized that we can't rescue our way out of it when people started calling with the lions and tigers and ligers and cougars and all of these other cats. Mm-hmm. And so about 98 or 99, I started working on a federal bill that would ban the private possession of these cats. And it passed in 2003, but it had a bunch of loopholes. Mm. And the loopholes were anybody with a USDA license could continue to buy, breed, and sell. And to get a USDA license, it was name, address, telephone number, and $35. So it wasn't a big deterrent. And so ever since 2003, we've been trying to close that loophole with the Big Cat Public Safety Act, which is a bill that will stop the cub handling, which is what drives most of the breeding and discarding of these cats. Mm-hmm. And then it also phases out private ownership. So it doesn't take anybody's pet away from them. They can keep them until they die. They just can't buy or breed more because these cats don't belong in cages.
Interesting. It's interesting that it came all about with one animal at an auction. Kind of snowballed from there. How did Tiger King come about? Why did you decide to do the show?
Did you ever see Blackfish?
Yes, I have. Yep.
So Blackfish was something that really changed the industry because it exposed the cruelty involved in keeping orcas captive. And when people saw that, they didn't want any part of keeping orcas captive. Mm-hmm. So it changed, SeaWorld has completely changed their model. They're not breeding anymore. They're not taking them from the wild anymore. They're phasing out the ones that they have and will replace them. And the producers of Tiger King came to us about 5 years before Tiger King came out. And they said, we want to do a Blackfish for big cats that will expose this horrible underbelly. And if people knew about these horrible things these animals go through, they would never support it. And we were all on board to do that. The name of their show was called Stolen Wildlife. And every time they called, we'd have them out in the sanctuary. We introduced them to all of the experts in the field because you need all of those talking heads. You need the scientists and you need mm-hmm. the people that have been working on legislation and all of these experts that can tell people you shouldn't have big cats in cages. And so that's what we thought we were working on, to the point where when they started doing the teasers, like a week or so before it came out on Netflix, we actually called the producers up and we're like, who's working on that show? Because usually, everybody who's working in Hollywood knows what everybody else is working on. Yeah. And I hasn't heard anything about that thing. And then they didn't want to talk to us. And it was like, holy cats. And so we sat, my husband and I just binge watched it. And we could not believe that that was what they produced after what they had told us they had been working on for 5 years.
Do you feel that that was their intention from the beginning? And it changed, or do you feel like they were telling a lie from the beginning?
My husband and I have different answers on that. I think because originally they had sold it to CNN, which was the same outlet that had done Blackfish. And they were trying to sell it to CNN, and then CNN turned them down. And I think when CNN turned them down, they had to look for, well, where can we? We've been working on this thing for 5 years. Mm-hmm. How are we going to get our money out of it?
Yeah.
And I think when they went to Netflix, they said it's got to be something, fun and crazy. And that's what people watch. So I think they took all of the stuff that they had filmed over all those years and just recut it into the ridiculous dumpster fire of a show that was Tiger King.
Interesting. So, this podcast, just by happen chance, is going to release almost a year to the day of the Netflix Tiger King show, and the pandemic started all at the same time, at least here in the US. I'm sure a lot has changed for you over the last year. I mean, that's probably an understatement. But if you could, would you do it all over again?
There again, my husband and I have very different answers to that. He would say no. But I believe that everything happens for a reason and that it really does all turn out for the best. And so even though I was grossly mischaracterized and they did a huge disservice to anyone running a sanctuary to make it look like they're the same as these horrible zoos. Even though there were so many horrible things like that, the good news is people actually know about this industry now. And before then, when we would go to DC and say, there's people that have 400 tigers, because Joe said he had 400 tigers there at GW Zoo, that are pumping out 200 cubs a year and then they're discarding them as soon as they're 4 months old. They were like, no way. That can't happen in the U.S. We can't be doing that kind of stuff. That can't be possible. There's got to be some law against it. And now they realize, oh my gosh, there's not. So we really need a law against it.
All of us saw firsthand on Netflix, didn't we? What would you say then is the biggest positive that came about over the last year for you personally?
I think the biggest positive is the fact that our bill had gotten further last year than it's ever gotten before. And it actually got to the floor of the House for a vote. I mean, we've been trying to do this since 2003 and we could not get it to the House floor for a vote. And it came there after Tiger King came out. And I think it had to have impacted people being willing then to contact their member of Congress and say, we can't let this happen. This is horrible. This just can't happen here. And so we passed with a 2/3 support, which is like unheard of. And so, unfortunately, it was in December and the session was ending. And So we didn't get it through the Senate in time, but we introduced again this year and have 130 co-sponsors already. And so it is really just clicking along. And I think we're going to be introducing in the Senate very shortly. And so I think there's a very, very, well, I'm almost 100% sure that this thing is going to pass this year, because we had the momentum necessary at the end of last year. It's just the session ran out on this.
Well, very interesting. You know, in June of last year, it looks like you were awarded Joe Exotic Zoo. Were any of the animals placed in your care at that point? And, you know, what's being done with the land today?
He left behind, you know, Joe was already in jail, but Chet, his partner, had left behind 3 tigers, 2 bears, and 11 wolves. And so we worked with a sanctuary out in Colorado that actually came out there for the transition and took all of the animals and took them out there. So they went from living in cages that were about 10 feet by 16 feet to 85 acres for the animal. I mean, not just like the whole thing, it's like 9,000 acres. So animals are living a much better life than they ever had before. And as far as what's going on now, the zoo's up for sale. We've had a few nibbles at about 150,000. But what we're requiring is that it never be used as a zoo again, because we don't want those, we don't want wild animals in cages there. And so we
start all over again. So, you know, I've heard before that it's estimated that there's more tigers in captivity in the United States than there is in the wild. What do you feel that should be done to reduce the number of tigers and large cats in captivity while increasing the number in the wild?
You know, one of the things that Tiger King did not get across well to people, based on the number of calls that I got about it, I got a few calls, let me tell you, was that there's this misconception that breeding tigers in captivity is somehow conserving the species and will save them for future generations. But none of the cats that are in any of these backyard zoos, these roadside zoos, none of those cats can ever serve any kind of conservation value, because they're crossbred, different subspecies, they're inbred because people want to see white tigers or white lion. And so they have absolutely zero conservation value. And what's even worse is they negatively impact conservation, because what happens is when you are throwing 200 ligers and tigers and lions into that mix every year, because those are the cast-offs from having your pay-to-play session where you hold a cute little cub, 200 of those cats going into that industry every year are then disappearing off the radar. And we know that a lot of them are ending up in canned hunts or being sold for their parts, their teeth, their bones. And when you expand that market, what you do is you also expand the demand for the premium product, which would be the wild tiger. So it's causing more tigers to be poached in the wild, because you're expanding that legal trade in the cats for their parts. And so that's why it's so critical that we pass this bill before the cats go extinct in the wild. They will bounce back in the wild if we just protect habitat for them. And my idea for doing that, and what I've already set up two augmented reality zoos in different malls here in Florida, and we just partnered with the Museum of Science and Industry to set up a display there. But we also created a virtual reality game. So when you put the headset on, you are actually transported into a virtual forest. And it's patterned after Ranthambore, which is one of the biggest tiger reserves. And the person who is playing the game is learning how to track a tiger in the wild. They find the tiger has been snared by poachers. And so they go through all of the stuff that our vets would go through to be able to release that animal back to the wild. And then that person playing the game is the hero who gets to set the cat free. That's a much more engaging way to teach people about their role in nature and everything about them than seeing some animal languishing in a cage. So I see zoos adopting that kind of technology, where you put on a headset and you go to Mongolia and you see snow leopards in the wild, and you see jaguars in the wild. Or even having that streaming content coming to headsets everywhere. You go home from work, you put on your headset, you pick where in the world you want to go see wild animals, and you're seeing them through these internet-capable streaming 3D cameras where you are totally immersed in that animal's world. That's educational, and that's entertainment, and that causes the people who live with those animals to want to protect them if they're the people who are getting paid for that content, paid to manage those cameras, paid to make sure the infrastructure is kept up. So you empower the people who have been struggling in living with these animals to making mm-hmm. it their main source of income. I think that's a win-win kind of a world.
It's interesting. We live in Omaha, Nebraska, and I don't know if you know about the Henry Dorley Zoo. It's one of the, you know, top zoos in the United States, and they have kind of a new Asian exhibit, and we took the kids there, you know, walked through. There's the tiger exhibit. It's kind of an open area, and, you know, the tiger sleeping in straw. So it does seem like a much more engaging experience possibly for the kids, you know, rather than watching a tiger sleep in the sun, you know.
Yeah, and it teaches them a better message. I mean, the message we're teaching our children when we take them to see this sort of thing is that it's okay to take away the freedom of others as long as that amuses you. That's, mm-hmm. and that's not how we need to be raising our children. I realize that you probably do it because your parents did it and their parents did it. We've all been doing it for 200 years, but yeah. we need a new way, because the way we've been doing this pushed all of those cats to the edge of extinction. It didn't work, so we need a new way that actually protects the animals.
So, you know, this is a business show. So we'll ask some business type questions here. What would you say has been the biggest challenge that you've faced running the Big Cat Rescue? And what did you do to overcome it?
Wow. There's so many challenges. The biggest challenge that I deal with is just apathy. People think somebody else is going to take care of it. Somebody else is going to worry about saving the planet. Somebody else mm-hmm. is going to worry about saving our ecosystem. Somebody else is going to worry about whether or not we have air to breathe or water to drink. And we need to all be working on doing that together. But from a business standpoint, mm-hmm. I think the hardest thing that I have had to deal with has been, oh gosh, again, it kind of comes down to the same thing. It comes down to apathy of people really embracing the new out-of-the-box kind of thinking that is necessary to get us to the next level. People love to donate to a rescue. They just love it when we go someplace and we rescue an animal and we bring mm-hmm. it back to the sanctuary. They feel so good about making that donation. And that's wonderful that they do it. But the money that you raise from that rescue won't carry the cat past the first year that you have the cat. Sure. And so those cats, our cats, live into their 20s. So we've got to figure out every time we bring a cat in, you know, for the next 19 years, how are we going to feed this cat? And so we've done all kinds of things from, we used to have tours in the sanctuary, but we started that 5 days before Tiger King. We mm-hmm. stopped it 5 days before because of COVID. And so we've lost over $1 million of our revenue there. And that's why I did Dancing with the Stars and Cameo and all of those kinds of things, why I make up that shortfall. You know, of course, we've got an online store. We do all kinds of donor recognition. I think one of the things we do best as far as donations go, we have to raise right around $4.5 million a year. And one of the things our donors tell us really matters to them is that they get a handwritten personalized card from us and an email, if we have an email address for them, thanking them every time they donate. And that's really rare, I understand, in this industry. So we try to go above and beyond when it comes to giving people what they are looking for. They're looking to make a difference. We're looking for ways to show them how to make a difference.
Yeah. And I'm sure that handwritten recognition gives them a good feeling about their decision to help out. If you could choose on the opposite side, what would you say is the best moment in Big Cat Rescue's history so far?
I think the best moment would have been when the Captive Wildlife Safety Act passed. It passed in 2003. And we had been working on it since like 98 or 99. It always takes several sessions. Mm-hmm. But in 2003, I had to turn away 312 big cats. And every other year, that number was doubling. So that was 312 cats more than what I actually took in that year. I took in a bunch of them, but there was 312 with no place to go. And so when that bill passed, what I saw was the very next year, the number of cats, instead of being 500 or 600, dropped to like 165. And then we've been working with other organizations, of course, all across this country, getting bans and partial bans passed at the state level. And so every year that number has continued to drop as far as the number of cats that are being discarded. So that was the big turning point for me that told me, okay, the way we fix this is through legislation, because we can't rescue our way out of it.
So just thinking about this, do you have a goal in mind of, you know, you pass this legislation, hopefully at some point, is your goal to run yourself, quote unquote, I know you're a nonprofit, but out of business?
Absolutely. That's been my 20-year plan. When my husband and I got married in 2004, I spent my honeymoon writing our 20-year plan. Mm-hmm. And so we're coming up on that 20 years. And what I had written out there was totally put ourselves out of business, because you shouldn't have to have places like Big Cat Rescue that rescue cats from horrible situations. We can just stop having horrible situations. Mm-hmm. We'll still do rehab and release of native born animals that can go back to the wild, because they're going to still get hit by cars and that sort of thing.
Sure.
But there's no reason for people to be breeding lions and tigers and then discarding them into awful situations.
One question, I guess, that comes to mind, or curiosity, you mentioned that it's not possible to release a captive tiger or big cat back into the wild. At an early age, what reason do you think that is? Is that they don't know how to hunt? Or what would be the reason you couldn't release them back into the wild?
There's a couple of reasons. One is we can do that with smaller cats. So like we do it with bobcats. And I think you could probably get away with it, maybe up to the size of a Florida panther, which is about a 90-pound cat. When you start getting into mountain lions, which are the same, you know, they're cougars, panthers, they have a lot of names, but some of those guys are like 260 pounds. And what happens is if they get imprinted on the person who's taking care of them, seeing that person as a source of food or comfort in any way, then when they approach people in the wild, either they will be shot by people because they're scared to death of why that cat's doing that, or they will end up being harmed by that animal because it has no fear of humans if you screw up and don't do it right. So that's why I think it's possible with the small cat species to breed them and release them back to the wild. And there's actually a program in Spain for the Iberian lynx. It was a cat that was completely wiped out, and now they're bringing it back. But the key to that is you have to keep those animals completely away from people. And then they had the mothers raise their own kittens in captivity. And then those kittens are the ones that are released back to the wild. So they know what it's like to be raised by a mom. So they know how to raise their own. But they're completely feral, you know. Whereas all of these cats that are being bred in captivity, they're being bred so that people can hold and cuddle them for 12 weeks. And then you've already imprinted on them at that point. You're never going to turn that around. So it's two things. One is it's dangerous. And two, the mother would spend a couple of years teaching them everything they know about being a big cat. And there's just no way that we could do that in captivity successfully without imprinting on them.
Interesting. So who do you consider a mentor? And what would you say is the most important lesson they've taught you?
I think my husband has been my best mentor. He came on board with us in 2003. I met him in 2002, but it took him a while to get his feet wet. And he was a Harvard MBA, and he's got a law degree. I'm a 10th grade high school dropout. And so we have almost nothing in common, except that we both really respect the integrity in each other. And that was mm-hmm. attracted us initially. I mean, exactly that word when I was like, what's most important to you? And it turned out both of us had said the same thing. But we make such a good team because he is so good at building relationships with people, whereas I'm kind of an Enneagram 8, and I don't mean to be harsh or rude. I appreciate it when people are straight with me and tell me mm-hmm. exactly what they're thinking and how they feel. Don't butter me up. Don't, you know, give me a whole long song and dance. Just get to the point and I'm fine with it. I won't take any offense. And I deal with people that same way. And a lot of people don't like that. So he's really taught me how to soften my approach with people and to be a little less outspoken, which you wouldn't know because in tiger being, I think I came across as pretty outspoken, but I've actually toned it down a lot.
Interesting. So before we get to the last question that I ask everybody, where can our listeners find out more about Big Cat Rescue?
We are everywhere as Big Cat Rescue. So if there is a social site out there and you search Big Cat Rescue, you're going to find us. Our website is bigcatrescue.org. And we have a whole team of, I think it's like 110, 140 people that work online on our Instagram and our Facebook. And these are all volunteers. And they make sure that when people go to any of our social sites and post something, they will get an answer. If you're asking a question, you will get an interaction from a real person.
That's awesome. So last question, if you could hop into a time machine and go back to, I guess, the day that you were at that auction and you rescued that bobcat, what advice would you give your past self?
You know, I feel like if I knew then what I know now, I don't know how I could do this, but I think if there was any way I could do this, I would not have even rescued that first animal. I would have found some other way to make sure that she was taken care of. But I would, if I had known, it would set me on this path. I have to raise, like I said, over $4 million every year just to take care of the animals that we have already committed to for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I was able to do the fundraising and everything necessary and spend all of that on getting the laws changed, I think I could have done it by now. I've just been so totally distracted by having to run this enormous operation. It's got 88 volunteers and mm-hmm. 10 staff now. We had to let 12 of our staff go because of COVID. And so, you know, I think I could have done so much more in the realm of ending the trade at its root if I had known that that was the problem. It just took me a while to get my head wrapped around it.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, because only in hindsight could you discern that. There's no way that at that very moment where you're trying to save that one life or that one animal that you would have ever thought it would grown into what it is today, and you could have used the money differently.
Yeah. At every point I thought, how hard could this be to fix? Why was I not you?
Well, Carol, that brings us to the end. I really appreciate you jumping on a call with me and doing this podcast. It means a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.
If you're a small business owner or looking to start a business, join the Small Business School Facebook group. It's a private community of people focused on helping each other grow their businesses. Join the community and let's help each other take our businesses to the next level. We'll see you there. If you'd like to learn more about our guest today or be a future guest on the Small Business School, go to craigsdaily.com/podcast for more info. And of course, it would mean the world to me if you'd click subscribe or write a review for the Small Business School in your podcast app of choice. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.